The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Ladies, do have a think about the questions that you want to ask Danae in just a moment. I think that was incredibly, well, I'm not even going to comment because that was amazing. But I have some questions that you talk about so many things, and I want to just ask for your thoughts on, we've got a lot of mums here today, and whether you're a mum of a son or a daughter, I just want to come back to something you said recently. You said that 70% of 14-year-olds are either dieting or looking for dieting. So for the mums and the sisters and the aunts and the grandmums, I don't know if we've got any grandmums. We've got any grandmums in the room? We've got a grandmother in the room. We've got two grandmas in the room. That's three. Amazing. How can we change this thinking? How can we be mindful and positively influence young girls to think differently?
I think it definitely starts with us. You know, children are sponges, aren't they? They just soak in absolutely everything we do. The other day I was like, you know, I have one of those foot scrubbers to scrub the old skin off your feet. My baby was in the bath and I was there like scrubbing my foot next to the bath, and she just really wanted that scrubber, and she takes it and she starts trying to like scrub her little baby feet, right? And this is what children do, they're sponges. So for me, it comes down to the really simple things. Like, I will never say this is good food, this is bad food. I will never say, oh, I'm not going to eat that because it's fatty. I'm not going to eat that because it will make me gain weight. Oh, I'm too big, too small, my body is wrong for this outfit. I'm very mindful of the words we use. And I think it's also about educating our partners. You know, my husband is an Italian man. He has never thought about a lot of these things. And for him, it's a bit like, oh, women even worry about that? And I'm like, they absolutely do. And you have to be really careful with the language you use, because little girls, they're going to be fed from their friends and from society 1,000,000,000 ways that they are wrong. It is our jobs to help. It's our job to help give them the tools to navigate that.
Wow. Look, you're involved in social media, and a lot of what you've just said relates to your role as a role model in social media. But the algorithms feeding that we see on social media feeds our fears as well as our preferences. And sometimes it's almost, I don't know about you, but I find it impossible to escape. You mentioned about this, what is that, an advert for? I mean, this is insane.
A cream for your hoo-ha.
That's
nice. And it starts out and the ad is like, oh, does your hoo-ha smell like fish? My boyfriend says mine smells like fish. I'm like, oh my God, if it smells like fish, cowgirl, you don't want to buy that cream. Like, we should have a conversation. But also, like, how horrible of an ad. It's using shame to sell, isn't it? TikTok Italy. Sorry, sort that out. I don't know if I can say that. You're like, oh no, this is live.
But the algorithms feed us. They feed what we see positively. They feed what we receive negatively. And they receive, for me, quite often, I'm seeing at the moment, I don't know if anybody else is in menopause, but good grief. If I get one more message on my... How do they know? But they know I'm in menopause, and I'm getting all these messages about menopause and about these this yoga that I should be doing, and this drug that I should be taking, and this therapy that I should be having. But what can we do to adjust what we see? Where do we start to change what we absorb? Because no matter who you are, nobody can get away from the fact that that influences us.
Oh, it absolutely influences us. And I think as adults, we often think we're immune to it. We're like, oh, it doesn't bother me. I'm fine. I can look at that. It's fine. Oh my gosh, our brains are like sponges, and we soak in that. And study after study after study has proven this to be true. So I think one of the really tangible ways is Instagram has, if you go into settings, you can then modify. I've got a post on my page, but you can modify what kind of ads they're showing you. So on Instagram, you can very visibly restrict. You don't want to see diet content. You don't want to see like supplement content. On TikTok, you can quite quickly click that an ad is not of interest to you. Like, TikTok constantly will try to feed me diet stuff, I think because it knows I'm a woman in my 30s and I'm into health and fitness, and so it'll then switch that into diet. And so I'm constantly clicking, like, not of interest, not of interest, not of interest. But I think it's also about, you know, monitoring who we follow, doing regular social media health checks. Like, does this serve me? Is this making me happy? But you have to be strict because, of course, like, it's interesting to watch that stuff or look at that stuff. And then you start to think and you're like, oh, but is this wrong with me? Or is this, you have to be so strict because it impacts our mind and it changes how we feel when we look in the mirror.
Absolutely. Everyone resonating with that, I think. I'm going to come back to you with another question, but I want to get everybody involved. I don't want this just to be on stage. Does anybody have any comments or questions that they want to ask Danae? Anybody got anything that they want to add to that?
I like Danae. Thank you for your inspirational talk. And one word came to my mind when you were going through all your different life experiences, and that is of compassion. That is really resonated with me so much, that to be compassionate to ourselves and to really listen to our bodies. I'm a dietitian and nutritionist by profession, and I've worked with people and very young girls who've gone through eating disorders themselves. So I really understand what you might have gone through. And the thing that really pops up at the moment is to listen to our bodies, to be intuition, to eat with intuitive eating and mindfulness, but at the same time, like, okay, we can restrict what we watch, but no amount of restriction will help unless it comes from within. So we need to understand that if we are happy, we have to be in a positive vibe, we have to believe in ourselves, it has to be from within us. And we are enough no matter what, and no matter of amount of advertising, ads, or any body image that we have to, that we come across, it does not sort of, I'm trying to find the right word, it does not define us. It is we, the way we are, that makes us. And there is no one else in this world that it is us, it is me. And that, I think, that is very beautiful for us to understand, that no matter where we go, we don't underestimate ourselves. We are as beautiful as we are from within.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of my favorite thoughts is that I think all of us have like a kernel of truth inside of us. And when we start coping with weird mechanisms, whether it's food, fitness, alcohol, I think often it's because we're trying to ignore that voice, right? Like, part of us always knows. That little seed is always there. And whether it's we're in a bad relationship, but we're like, no, but on paper, he's perfect. On paper, I had this. I'm 30. I'm about to be 30. I want children. On paper, he's perfect. I should stay with this person. But that seed, right, that little seed is there. And as we start to move away from it, our emotions come out in other ways. And so I'm such a big fan of constantly just trying to tune into that little seed. I remember when I was really sick, all I would feel was anxious. I wouldn't feel sad or angry or happy. I would just feel anxious. And they actually, you can Google this. They have a wheel on the internet. And it's an emotion wheel. And it's often for people who struggle with anxiety, because anxiety can mask so many emotions. So you print out that wheel and you start to ask yourself, what am I actually feeling? What's under this anxiety? And like, what voice am I not listening to?
Thank you. And you just touched there on what you talked about, the kernel, the what's inside of you. It's something that took me 45 years to get in contact with. I lost that inner gut, that ability to navigate from my gut. To be 45 years to get there, and I absolutely, I'm with you on that. There was something that you posted recently that made me incredibly angry. Not because of what you had posted, but because of what you were referring to, and this is AI-generated influencers. And I had to share this with you because I don't know if any of you have seen Danae's post about, anyone seen about the post about the AI influencers? So there are, well, I'm going to let you explain what this is, but I wanted to ask you about this and also ask, for us as women of three generations, but also for the women who come behind us, How do we fight what we are being fed?
I think if you're not aware about AI influencers, it's something we really need to inform ourselves about, because I reckon in the next year, there are going to be hundreds of them. Already they're popping up quite prolifically. What they are artificial intelligence influencers. So women, mostly women, quite often created by men. They're quite often hypersexualized, very certain assets that, like almost like in a video game, but they look very realistic. And they'll do things, you know, they'll be, here's me trying on my new makeup, and it's a selfie video. Here's my new bikini haul. Here's me on a boat in Malibu. So it feels super realistic, and it's very difficult to tell when they're not real. The danger, I think, is especially for the generations that come next, because you have young girls looking at this. And, okay, already you can kind of tell sometimes if they're not real, but just a little bit. It's like, it looks like someone who's just put on a bunch of filters. Mm-hmm. So already it's getting hard to tell. But even if you can tell, even if they have clearly marked this is a digital influencer, a lot of these influencers are getting a lot of followers and they're getting a lot of money. And for many young teens and children who see social fame as a means to success, and they do, what message is that sending? You know, when you have these unrealistic, unachievable, because they are not real, standard of beauty women who are getting brand deals and getting campaigns and getting one of the big ones, Aitana Lopez, has over 200,000 followers. So they're getting followers. One of her co-AI influencers who's under the same company, created by a man who used to work with real influencers but then got tired of their egos, so he made these digital ones. So there's another one that he's created who looks very much like a young girl, like a young Kate Moss, but she's over 18. She's not real, but she's over 18, and she, in her profile, says that she's pure, naive, and innocent, but exploring her bisexuality. This is the world that our children are growing up in, and we as adults, we have to be informed about this. You might have noticed recently on Instagram in the last week, they now have a little tag that says AI-generated content, because that is how prolific this is becoming and how quickly it is growing.
So what can we do as parents, sisters, aunts? I mean, we have to be aware.
We have to be aware.
What can we do for our younger generations, for the mums here that have daughters? And what would you do for your daughter to really drive that home? Because it's difficult for a young girl, mm-hmm. or even a 14-year-old, to identify the fact that this is not a level playing field.
No. Well, I think the huge thing is we have to be aware, because I think the vast majority of adults our age are not aware that this is happening. We're not the ones scrolling on TikTok coming across these AI influencers, you know, and some of them do look like teen girls with very womanly assets. We're not the ones on TikTok coming across that. So we have to be aware so that we can have the conversations. We can open the dialogue with our daughters and with our children. I think helping them understand that there is an industry behind these women, again, often created by men, an industry that wants to make money, helping them understand that the system is rigged, it is a dirty game, it is a disgusting game, helping them understand that this type of beauty is unachievable because it is not real. Mm-hmm. But how can we do any of that unless we ourselves are informed?
Thank you. I have one other question in regards to what you just spoke about, and I've also, and again, I'm speaking for women today who may know other women, sisters, aunts, daughters, so on, who are going through this experience. I just did a show, it was incredibly powerful, on eating disorders. I myself had anorexia, then bulimia, then anorexia and bulimia when I was in my teens, from the age of 13 to 19. And if you aren't aware of it, for me, it was a prison. It was a prison that I had to face every day, because we all have to consume something to stay alive. And it's one of the huge challenges of eating disorders is that you have to engage. You can't avoid it. And we had two incredible, incredible young ladies on that show. And I would encourage anyone to go and see it. Very, very brave young women for speaking out. When I was going through that, back in the 80s, early 90s, there was 3.4% of the population, women, female population, that were diagnosed with eating disorders. We're now looking at 8.97%. So we're looking at a huge growth. So for anyone from your experience, from anybody who knows someone, that almost 1 in 10 women are diagnosed. And we're talking about diagnosed. We're not talking about any other form. We're talking about the people that have been identified and being treated. How would you encourage somebody who knows someone who's going through that?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the big things to acknowledge is that I read a stat, it's something like 80% of eating disorders or disordered eating goes undiagnosed because it's so deeply tied to shame. And it's also very normalized, and it's also very rewarded in our society to be thin, to be controlled with food, to skip carbs, you know, name it, you name it. So I wanna say, like, another stat I read is like 1 in every 4 or 1 in every 3 women is struggling quite strongly with food and how she navigates food. So if anyone you know is struggling, I would say speak to them without shame. Don't rush in with the urge to fix. We want to fix things. We want to make it better. And the simple solution is, well, why don't you eat? Or why don't you eat differently? Or why don't you stop throwing up? Mm. Of course, that would fix the problem, but that's not what the problem is. And they're already feeling enough shame, embarrassment, humiliation. So create a space where it says, you know, I love you. I'm worried about you. I want to help you. And the minute you're ready, I am here for you. Provide them resources. NEDA, the National Eating Disorder Association, has a free helpline. You can call anytime. A lot of people don't know that. So resources like that. Okay, you're struggling. Here's a website that might be beneficial to you. And allow them the chance to talk. You know, do you want someone to come with you to see a nutritionist? Do you want someone to come with you to see a nurse? It's a hard battle. Disordered eating is so hard to fight. They deserve to know that it's not hopeless and that there's someone at their side.
Fantastic. Ladies, does anybody have a question for Danae? Does anybody have any comments or something? Sarah, please.
So I wouldn't say I have an eating disorder, but saying that most women go undiagnosed because of shame makes me remember that I don't remember the last time I genuinely enjoyed eating food. Because I always went through phases of eating very healthy, very clean, and then doing 3 days eating like complete shit, and then doing days not eating. And I got told recently, like, Sarah, when you started binge eating, if you even can call it that, what emotion is it that you're trying to avoid, or what emotion is this food kind of filling you with? And I don't know how to answer that because I don't know if it's an emotion that I'm per se lacking or not expressing. And I don't understand why my relationship with food isn't flowing easily. I'm like, oh, I'm going to eat this and I'm going to enjoy it. I don't understand where it's coming from. And I know, like, yes, magazines, and I used to check these, like, military diets at 13 years old where it would consist of, like, a boiled egg and a carrot. And it was normalized. My mom was like, yeah, that makes sense. Or she doesn't do this anymore, but she would eat a piece of chocolate and then spit it out because she didn't want to consume the calorie. At 13, I was so proud of the fact that I could tell you how many calories a chocolate bar had. And I thought that that's like, oh, I'm educated on like the food I'm eating. No, I'm making myself sick by thinking I'm educating myself. And I really like the fact that you said that there's no good food and bad food. There just is food and how you feel about it. But back to my question is this an emotion? Like, is there a difference between emotional eating and a difference between like not understanding why it is that you're doing what you're doing? If that makes any sense. I don't know if the question was clear.
It is. It makes sense to me. I mean, first off, I would encourage anyone who is kind of struggling or even, they say it becomes a problem when your relationship with food is on your mind. And when you're doing things, especially if you're restricting and binging, that's a very clear sign that that isn't a balanced situation. So So I would really encourage anyone who is navigating that to look at resources, to get therapy. I mean, I've been in therapy in and out of my life, and it's such, in the same way, if we have a broken leg, we go to the doctor, there is no shame. And if we are trying to navigate something and we can't find a way to do it, going to someone who can help us. We often know with binge eating in particular, when you binge, your brain releases kind of happy, soothing chemicals that become very addictive. And people who binge describe it as going into a fog. They calm down. They're in that moment. It's afterwards that you feel the guilt and the shame. And you think, okay, well, now I'm going to be really good. I will never do that again. I'm going to be really good. I'm going to eat just lettuce and salad and vegetables. And so you do that for 3 or 4 days, but the human brain starts to think, oh, but I want that. And also our brains need, our brains function off of fat, carbs, these sorts of things. We need those. So you start to crave it and you want it. No, no, yes. And the cycle continues. So I do think, I think for many things that have to do with food, there will be emotions tied to it, whether it's happening chemically or hormonally, or there are things that you're navigating in your life. But it's a very complex question, and it's something I think it's beautiful you asked, but I'd also recommend speaking to someone.
I just wanted to say, we're going to come to a lovely lady just over here. I just wanted to say, I know who we're coming to, and I'm going to cry. But I just wanted to say, when I hosted the show on eating disorders just a couple of weeks ago, one of the things, after 40 years, I'm listening to young ladies and I'm feeling seen. Nothing had changed. I still could identify with what they were saying. I still know exactly how many calories there is in a digestive biscuit, in a carrot, mm-hmm. and I'm 40 years, 36 years down the line. I still have banned foods that I don't eat because they trigger me. And I want to just reiterate that we are not alone in this. There are so many women, whether it be from this extent to this extent, that, as you said, we are all experiencing something.
When you said that you get people to help you, I remember my boyfriend telling me, I don't want to see you die. So for me, it was, sorry. So he told me, figure out a plan and we do whatever you want, but I cannot stay with you if you're dying, because I cannot lose a person that I love, because simply I'm with her and I'm not doing nothing. So I started training. Until then, from 2015, he has been there for every race, for every achievement, because he knows, for every alarm clock in the morning, because he knows that if I don't train, I don't eat. So for me, all the people that I met, and they helped me to eat, because I never imagined myself coming to this event, knowing that there is a brunch. Because for me, that was the worst part of the event. Like, I would have literally left, because I don't want people to see me eat, to consume. Like, it was a torture for me, food. But nowadays, I'm like, I need to eat. And yes, after, you know, I started to get food. I was seeing cellulite more, because obviously I needed some fat. And nowadays, but I look at myself and say, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I couldn't even move. I didn't even have hair. I didn't even have good nails. So, like, now I compensate with that. And I think this is the first time I'm sharing this, but I'm seeing Sarah sharing it, so. So I think people like you should continue to share, because unfortunately I hear girls today, like 14, 13, and they're looking in the mirror, they say, I'm not thin enough. And I know that feeling, that I cannot tell them, you're not thin, because they're not going to believe me. Because I literally, at 13 years old, I wanted to put myself under a cheese grater and, like, literally remove my skin. Like, literally. And I hated going to the beach, and if I see someone laughing, they're laughing because of me, because I'm big and I'm everything.
So like if I could, I could have put myself under a grater, literally. That was literally was doing that to myself. So now that I moved on, I'm really like, I was in a prison, like Trudy said. So, and I'm out of that prison. But I really feel that there is no much awareness for this kind of disease, because that is what it is. And yes, people like you are making it happen. And for me, that Trudy did a podcast about eating disorders, which consists of the word anorexia, finally, in 2024, it was so much, because at least someone is talking and speaking about it.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. That's all I'm going to add. Thank you.
Hi, I'm here because I follow you. And in my journey, it wasn't anorexia, but body dysmorphia. And I wanted to point out something that I feel clicked throughout the conversations that you guys were having. How we can change things is by normalizing what is normal. This is what Danae does. When I looked in the mirror and saw someone who I was not, because then time went by and I realized when I looked at photos, I looked beautiful, I didn't look like how I thought I looked. And when someone shares their insecurities, you understand that it's not just you that has them, and that what's normal is not what's on social media. So although we are on social media and we put the best pictures with makeup on, and even I put makeup on to come today, what led to the AI girls is that before, the influencers used to look perfect. So we kind of fueled it. So what we really can do is keep showing our true selves and how it is before having a baby, postpartum. I watch all these reels about women in postpartum. I was like shocked with how much courage it gave me. And yeah, I think that is one of the main points that I would like to share.
If I may, you just said something there that Danae, you posted something a while back and it resonated with me and I kept thinking about it. In 2019, I had the year of my life. It was just prior to COVID. I met my husband, I have to say that. He's outside, it's okay. I met my husband, but I was at XFM. XFM was doing really, really well. I had just done the 126-kilometer run. I was top of my game. And I looked back at photographs. It was after you posted something. And I remember, I looked back at the photographs and I said to myself, wow, I looked good and I felt fat. Anybody else?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's such a powerful phrase. I looked good, but I felt fat.
Yeah.
I mean, for anyone who's ever gone to bed, you know, and you go to bed and you feel really confident and you feel comfortable in your skin and you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you go, no. Your body didn't change overnight. And that's one of the things I always come back to. My body did not magically change overnight. It just has to do with what's going on in here and here. I looked good, but I felt fat.
Yeah, yeah. Any more questions? We have we got two more. Guess what? We're running a little bit late.
I've spoken a lot today. Danae, thank you so much for being here. It's such a pleasure having you. I've been following you for a long time, and I have to say it's helped me a lot to remove certain people from social media and follow people like yourself with positive influence. I think what I would love... I can hold it. Thank you. holding my mic, taking it away. I think I would love, besides... the tool, if you could give us three toolkit things, advice or tips on positive self-image, what can we do besides the Instagram things, besides following people like yourself and following people who don't serve us well? Are there any other practical tips that we can do daily to continue this fight for a kind of peaceful body acceptance? I think that's all I strive to. I don't strive to look like a supermodel. I just strive to, oh my God, if I could wear a bikini on the beach, I would be so happy. Like, I'm in swimsuits and I have been since I was 25. But, and that's fine. I still go to the beach and I'll say, I have a good relationship with food, I would say, but I wouldn't wear a bikini. So there's still that. I don't know, is there any mantras? Is there like self-talking in the mirror? Like, what is it that we can do?
That's a great question. I mean, I think for me, some of the things that have been the most helpful is one, remembering there's a huge corporation currently worth $90 billion that is taking money from every single insecurity that we have. So there is a commercial and monetary, there's a monetary interest in making us feel bad about ourselves. So whatever we are feeling, whatever we are struggling with, we were not born with those. Those were fed to us by organizations that want to profit off of making us feel bad about our bodies. And that, just holding that close helps me because it makes me angry. And I think anger can be a very powerful emotion. Two, remembering that every single person is going through their own battle. So you said you want to wear a bikini on the beach. I bet you many of the other women wearing bikinis on the beach are a little bit nervous about how they look in that bikini. And they're nervous that every other single person is looking at them. But at the end of the day, we're all the heroes of our own story. So we see the world through our own lens, and I can guarantee you, those other women are not going to be staring at your body. So you just have to, you were talking earlier about doing that first step. You have to get out there, and no one can take it from you. And I think once you do it once, you'll realize no one pointed and laughed. No one really cared, because they're all dealing with their own insecurities. And finally, I think just being really gentle with wherever you are, it goes back to that shame cycle. When we try, we are so beautifully emotional, so many of us, and there is no shame, there is no embarrassment in that. But we can acknowledge that feeling, and if it doesn't serve us, we can say, okay, today I don't like how my thighs look. Okay, but you're not serving me. I'm going to let that thought go. I'm going to stop staring at myself in the mirror, and I'm going to go do something that makes me happy. Okay. So being gentle with wherever you are.
Thank you. I think we have one final question. Do we have a question?
My question was very similar to the question before, but I wanted to ask you, because you shared a lot that you get also the negative comments from people from all over the world, while you are such a beautiful human being and you're sharing so much inspiration amongst women about the self-image and everything. And as much as I believe that the comments from other people, it's projecting, they are projecting their insecurities on you by sharing negative comments. That's, I'm wondering, and that was very similar question, how we are dealing with the thoughts that we actually have in our head about ourselves, because that's worse. We can close the Instagram or Facebook or wherever, we can close it and not look at it and try to forget about that stuff and think that those things doesn't influence us, and try to kind of go with the rule, let them be mean to you, let them think about whatever they want about you, and you know, that's them, that's their problems. And we can handle that, and I'm handling that very well. But what about the thoughts that we have in our head that were put by actually somebody else that was close to you, that you thought maybe is your friend, or it was your parent, or was sister, brother, whoever, was someone that you actually trusted, that you know, were living with, or someone that you loved, that's told you that you are fat, you are not worth it. How we are dealing with thoughts like that, that they stay with us for the whole life?
Yeah, I do think those thoughts are much harder to deal with. I've been in a relationship before with someone who said really mean things about my body, and he was someone I thought, you know, loved me and was going to be with me for my whole life. And when you let someone in, it's like you take off the armor, and so they're already in the soft part of you. And those words, they hit harder and they stick longer. I'm not going to tell you to ignore them, because I think, like, you know, if I say don't picture a pink elephant, all you're going to think about is a pink elephant. Like, it's going to be there. But I think one of the things that has really helped me is there's this little, it's like an exercise where you picture yourself in the body of your best friend. You are living, you have control of your best friend's body. Your soul is in her body for a day, 2 days, 3 days. What things would you say to that body in the mirror? How would you treat that body? You'd probably feed it. You'd be gentle to it. You'd give it love. because her as a person, just for existing, she is so worthy of that love. So if you can extend that kindness to her, you sure as heck deserve to extend that kindness to you.
Thank you so much. Can we please thank you to Danae for being with us?